This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3406 for Monday, the 23rd of August 2021. Today's show is entitled, A Study of Cards in Games and is part of the series Tabletop Gaming. It is hosted by Klaatu and is about 27 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is currency, deterrent coercion, clutter rules.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hey everybody, you're listening to Hacker Public Radio. My name is Klaatu, and in this episode I want to talk about game design, which is a hobby of mine. I'm by no means qualified to speak about this, but I'm doing it anyway for want of anyone else doing it on this network. So until someone qualified starts posting episodes about game design, I'm just going to keep on going myself. Anyway, I was thinking lately, because I like to design card games, and I was thinking lately about card, like what cards are in games, and even beyond that, what cards and I guess general assets in games are. Like when you're pulling things together to have components to make up a game, what components do you have sort of to choose from? And that's not to say that you shouldn't just make up your own stuff, but I think that there are, you know, if you look at different games broadly, you can kind of start to categorize things. And so I've been doing that. I've been, like I say, thinking mostly about this in terms of cards, because that's kind of a fun medium for me. But I'm sure that if one thought about it hard enough, one could find categories, these categories cropping up in other media. But here's the sort of the types of cards that I've been able to identify so far in gaming, and I've got six of them, and you know, like I say, there might be official terms for these, because I know that game design and game theory and all that other stuff, those are official, like there are actually fields of study around those, so I don't have like the official terminology, assuming there is official terminology. So I'm observing and making up terms sort of outside of that. So yeah, these are just observations, I guess. I'm not, again, not authoritative on this topic whatsoever, and haven't done any research on it. It's just things I've noticed as I play games and try to design new ones. Okay, so to start with, I think I'll start with, strangely, the one that is sort of the anti-asset, in a way. It is what I call clutter. And this is the stuff, these are cards that are designed, or maybe not designed sometimes, but end up as clutter in your, they clutter up the hand of your player. So, for instance, easy example here is Uno. If you've ever played Uno, it's like a Milton Bradley game or a, you know, Parker Brothers game. It's like a really sort of classic, at least where I'm from, it was a classic sort of kids game. And the idea of Uno was that, I haven't played it in years, so I'm probably getting some details wrong, but I don't think it matters. Object of Uno is to get rid of the cards out of your hand until you reach one card. And I think after you reach one card, I think you're meant to then get rid of that one card. I don't know the significance of sort of reaching one card. It seems to me like that's inevitable, so I'm not sure why that's singled out. But whatever. You reach one card, and then you get rid of that card. And the way that you get rid of cards in Uno is you look at the cards in your hand, you look at the top card of the sort of play deck on the table, and if you have a card that matches that card, the play card, the last played card in either color or number, then you can sort of discard your card. You can add your card to the top of that play pile. And then the next player has to have a card that matches that card in either color or number, and so on. If you do not have a card that matches in some way color or number of the top play card, then you have to draw a card. So in other words, in Uno, a card game, drawing a new card is punishment. And having cards in your hand is undesirable. It's, if you think about it, it's really, like, really strange. Why would that be the goal of the game? It's a card game. Just don't draw. And then you win automatically, right? But, I mean, these are how games are made. You know, you get, in this game, you get yourself into an undesirable state and work very hard to get rid of the things that you've got. So that's clutter. Nobody wants the cards. You can't give them away. There's another game called Dominion, which I don't think I've done a Hacker Public Radio episode on. I should. It's quite a good game. It's a deck building game. You're assembling your play deck as you play the game. So the game sort of changes as you go. And one of the ways that the game changes is that you have sort of shifting goals throughout. When you first start, you're trying to amass enough money, in-game money, currency, to purchase land, which are called victory points. So you're purchasing cards with in-game currency that will, at the end of the game, and I do mean the end, like after the game is over, these cards that you have purchased will count toward your victory. But during the game, those cards are useless. They don't have any special powers. They don't do anything for you. They're not currency of any sort. They're just, well, clutter. So those are cards specifically designed to frustrate the user, or the player. When you draw a hand and you've drawn a land or a victory point card that you have purchased with your hard-earned in-game currency, you're really frustrated because you only have 5 cards in your hand, and one of them, or 2 of them, or 3 of them, is one of these useless victory point cards that you can't do anything with. So that's an interesting way to treat some cards, that they're clutter. Now there are ways around clutter in Dominion, and indeed there are some ways sort of around certain mechanics of clutter in Uno. Both games have sort of power-up cards, as it were, or rule-breaking cards that change a rule for a moment, that allow you, for instance, to discard a card anyway, or whatever. So that's clutter. And I guess because I mentioned it, I'll jump up to currency next. So currency is a mechanic, or a type of card or asset that people use in-game to acquire, you know, as currency, to acquire other benefits of the game. Magic the Gathering, as I've mentioned in a very recent episode, 3396 or 3401, I think, Magic the Gathering has land cards that, when you tap them, they produce mana. And mana is the in-game currency that you spend in order to cast spells, or summon creatures, or do other things that make the game go. With mana, you're able to do the things that you want to do in the game. Now, as I've demonstrated in a recent episode, there are hacks around the limitation of only having so much mana by decoupling the relationship of land to mana in some ways. But you have to acquire those. Those are things that you have to draw from your deck, you have to own, you have to sort of work that into your deck initially. Similarly, in Dominion, you have currency. They are appropriately just, they're gold coins and copper coins and silver coins in Dominion. And you get to draw those, or you get to purchase those, rather. You start with some number of copper and you get to purchase silver, and then you, once you have enough silver, you can purchase gold. So you're working your way up. As part of the game, you're getting more and more valuable currency. But that's all those cards do, is they, you trade those cards in for other benefits of the game. And similarly in Dominion, you have hacks around sort of the currency limitations. So for instance, you have things like cards that not only grant you, I don't know, another turn, they also grant you sort of a temporary, until your turn ends, you have two extra gold coins. And so now, even though you might only have three copper coins in your hand, you happen to also have two more coins granted to you by this special card that you purchased with in-game currency. So that's currency. It's a fairly common convention in games, because it's a way of limiting players from sort of ramping up too quickly to the really powerful stuff. And it causes, well, just like in real life, it causes sort of a feeding frenzy and a mad rush on the bank to get currency, because you know you need currency in order to do some special thing, and that special thing, of course, will put you above your opponent in some way. That's currency, that's clutter. I've mentioned it a couple of times, so I'm going to skip over, well, I'm not going to skip, I'm going to jump over to rules. So rules, or rule breakers, are cards that are designed to modify the game engine as it runs. So, easy example here is Flux. I've done a podcast on Flux for Hacker Public Radio. Don't know the number off the top of my head. I'm out for a walk right now, so I can't look it up, but go listen to that. Flux is a really cool game. The long and short of it is that there are two rules in Flux: draw a card and play a card, but every card you draw, almost, modifies the game rules. So one card you draw might say, from now on, draw two. And so now you're drawing two and playing one. Something else might say, play all the cards in your hands every turn. And so you're playing insane amounts of, a ridiculous amount of cards every turn. And you're drawing two, and then you get something else, and it tells you a new way to win. Rather than doing this to win, you do that to win. So the rules are changing based on the cards themselves, and that is that's the design of Flux. But you see it elsewhere too. You see it in Magic the Gathering, certainly. You'll have a card that says that it's an enchantment or an artifact, and from now on, every creature that, you know, loses, that gets sent to the graveyard, grants you additional life, or and it lets you draw an extra card or something like that. So it's there are cards that you can draw to change the normal rules of the game, and that's fun. Like, those are exceptions. Those are rule-breaking moments. And I think any kind of, like, power-up card, I think, for myself, I put that into the rules category. Because, essentially, that's what, like, power-up cards are doing. And by power-up, I mean, you know, something that grants a card. I don't know if you could hear that through the microphone, but there are huge, like, I don't know what they're called. Yorkshire cows or Oxfordshire cows or something like that. They're big cows with, like, really long pointy horns. It's really amazing. They're really shaggy. Yeah, rules and power-ups. Like any power-up card, like it gives you, like a +1 to this card, or take an extra action this turn, or an extra turn, or something like, or skip the next player. Or in Uno, you have the wild card that you can play, and now the next player can put down any card that they want because the wild card counts as any number and any color. Or I think also in Uno, I think there's a reverse the direction that the gameplay is happening. I don't know if that's actually a benefit or just something wacky that makes people sort of excited because things are different now. But either way, rule changing stuff. Dominion has a bunch of these as well. You're acquiring your currency, thinking that you're going to be able to buy more land because you have more currency. And on your way to that, you're buying other cards that break the rules. Because natively, the rules of Dominion are to play, to take one action and to buy one thing. And that's all you can do. And then I think, yeah, that's it. That's all. But there are other cards that you can purchase for in-game currency that give you benefits, like take two actions, discard a card and replace it with a new one from your deck, buy two things instead of just one, or if you can. So yeah, rule-breaking cards are another category of cards. So next I'm gonna do persuasion cards. Persuasion cards are things that I classify as assets that encourage or discourage a fellow players from taking actions of some sort. They're persuasion cards. They're not currency, they're not winning conditions, they're not breaking any rules. They're just, or maybe they are. I mean, none of these are mutually exclusive, but the persuasion ones are things that that players know you, or maybe assume that you have, and will modify their behavior in some way. And along with this, I classify what I would call deterrent cards. So deterrent or persuasion, maybe they're the same, maybe they're slightly different in mood, but they help modify other players' behavior, either by explicit threat or by, suggestion of a threat. So for instance, in poker, I would say that the card functions in poker, all of the cards are essentially deterrent cards. Or persuasion cards. They encourage your fellow players to not to bet more, or to bet more money, or I don't know how poker works. I've only played Texas Hold'em. But yeah, in poker, you've got your cards, you got your card hands, you're making assumptions about what other people have. And so you're either increasing your bid or you're folding based on what you think the other players have. The cards themselves, essentially, from other players' viewpoints, they're all essentially the same. They all look the same from the back of the cards, right? Like they don't know that you have an ace or a full house or whatever. All they know is that you have some number of cards and a smug look on your face, and so they make assumptions based on that. Another one like that is the game Coup, COUP, like a coup on a government or whatever. Coup, you only have two cards in your hand, or is it three? Two or three cards in your hand. It's brilliant. I've done a Hacker Public Radio episode on Coup, I'm pretty sure. And once again, to other players, the cards are essentially completely equal because they don't know what those cards are, but they know that certain cards have certain abilities, and based on their either fear or their belief in that card, they are persuaded to modify their behavior in some way. And then finally, I have coercion, or coerce cards. Coercion cards, yeah, coercion. Let's go with coercion, that sounds better. Coercion cards are what I think of as, you know, all-out attack cards. They're the sort of the battle-ready cards that in some way modify the state of either the game board, as it were, or you know, the table, or the hands of other players. Magic the Gathering is the obvious example here. You're literally, well, not literally, but literally, you're in game, literally attacking other players. You're summoning creatures that ideally deduct points off of the player's life total. That's a coercive card. In Dominion, there are a couple of cards like this. I mean, there are a lot of expansion packs for Dominion, but at least in the base set, there are a couple like this. There's a Militia card that forces your opponent to discard two, or down to three cards. There's a Witch card that inserts a -1 victory point into your player's hand. There's a like a robber card or something like that that steals, I think, gold or something, you know, currency from an opponent, and so on. In Coup, there's one or two cards that outwardly attack the opponent, like the Assassin card. You don't like play the, no, I think you do actually play the Assassin. Yeah, so it's a very obvious attack. In the game Gloom, which is a sort of a spin, in a way, off of Dark Cults, which I've also done an episode about, you are placing potentially points on your opponent's family members to try to, well, it's kind of everything's reverse. So actually, you're trying to heal their, or benefit their family, but actually that's bad for them. But anyway, the point is that you are modifying the state of your opponent's win condition or proximity to the win condition, and those are coercion cards. And like I said, none of these are necessarily mutually exclusive. And I think that, in a way, persuasion, for instance, well, persuasion's a little bit funky. Maybe that's not one. Maybe it is. I don't know. Persuasion and deterrent are kind of essentially the same, arguably. But in my mind, I think persuasion is, I think of persuasion more when there's a bit of a looser table rule where, I mean, depending on the game, it might be written into the game rules where people are sort of bargaining for things like, hey, I'll give you this if you give me that, that sort of thing, the bargaining almost of persuasion. But that could also be your currency. You know, you could just outwardly bribe people with your in-game currency if that's allowed, or if it's not allowed, who knows? I don't know how you play. So that's it anyway. So I've got currency, persuasion / deterrent, clutter, coercion, and rules. Those are the things that I've identified in card games and in games in general. And I will say that one of the reasons that I sort of started down this thought process, this thought exercise, was because I realized when I was designing a game once that I had come up with some bonus cards, some power-up cards of sorts, that I didn't realize it at the time, and it wasn't until I play-tested it with some people who were quite used to card games, like a lot of different card games that I wasn't familiar with. I designed power-up cards that, at the time, I thought were really beneficial, and I thought, boy, people will really love these cards, because they're just, they really power things up. And I didn't realize it until it was pointed out to me that actually they just clutter up your hand, because they put your hand count at the maximum when all you really want to do is discard your stupid little measly power-up card and gain a really powerful card instead. So, you know, you got a power-up that gives you a +1. Well, that's great, but why not just discard it and kind of, you know, fish, as it were, for a something that's worth 5 in the first place. So I feel like identifying the kinds of cards that exist can kind of help you avoid potentially, or at least I should say, it's not necessarily about avoidance. It's also just kind of, it'll help you when you're designing things to identify the function of what you've just designed and really look at it and think and be able to identify whether it's actually what you intended or whether it's playing some other role that maybe you didn't intend, or that it is playing a couple of the different roles. Maybe it is a bonus in some circumstances and yet also a clutter card in other circumstances, and maybe that's okay. Like I say, in Dominion, that's surely by design, the fact that if you buy things too early in the game, you're cluttering up your hand and you need to come up with some other strategy that will break a rule for you so that you can then get rid of the clutter and get a better hand during your turn. Or just don't buy victory points until the very end of the game. There's flexibility there, but you have to deal with it. And that's by design. So I hope this has been, I don't know, sort of informative or at least interesting. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.